Welcome back to another episode of the Gradient Podcast. Today's episode is one small step for Gradient, one giant leap for podcast kind. That's right. We're talking about space.
But first, here's a little fun fact. If you're not watching us on YouTube, go check us out because for the first time in Gradient history, we show our faces.
You can see my beard now. This and more exciting things to come on our YouTube. So if you haven't already, go check us out and make sure to subscribe.
As always, we like to start by answering one of your questions. This one comes from @EstherGoldberg_ on Instagram, who says, what is your favorite thing about the Gradient Podcast?
I think my favorite thing about the podcast is when we're recording together and we're all, you know, we'll have, you know, a certain time frame, you know, a 30-minute episode is going to come out. But in all honesty, it's probably going to take us a couple hours to go through everything and make sure we do things right. And it's always a fun time.
That's so true. Especially today. My favorite part about the Gradient Podcast is how I can use this as a platform to speak my opinion and be as creative as I'd like.
Yeah, I always personally enjoyed the fun little banter we have while recording episodes. But all in all, and seriously, I do really enjoy that the platform that we have, that we as three teenagers can come together and talk about what's on our mind and how we think about what's going on. And it's really empowering for the three of us.
You're really going to see a teenage and youth perspective of the world. And that's sort of the concept we're trying to highlight through the Gradient Podcast.
100%. I love what we do here, and I love the opportunities and, you know, the different perspectives that we get to see through this platform.
And our support and the reason we continue is entirely thanks to you guys. We very much appreciate all the love we've been getting for the Gradient Podcast.
But when we start recording the podcast, sometimes, you know, episode recording gets a little crazy. But not as crazy as these moon landing conspiracies. So recently, our high school's yearbook team did a survey of students, and they found that about 16% of our high school students believed in the moon landing conspiracy, that it was faked and recorded on Earth.
Exactly 16% of the kids at our school actually have a clue about what's going on in the world right now.
Yeah. Now, it could very well be that they were joking, but as of right now, it does seem funny that roughly like 16% of the kids that we go to school with think the moon landing was faked.
Now, when we dive deeper into the statistic, we have to sort of analyze what makes the whole conspiracy like come to life. Like, what parts of the moon landing video seem fake to people?
I think a lot of people just believe that such an amazing feat of getting a man on the moon back in the 20th century.
Yeah, 1969. It was a very long time ago.
1969 was, I mean, I think people think that it was impossible at the time. And to be fair, you could definitely raise some skepticism. But again, I feel like the more you look into it, the more those doubts will kind of leave your mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, personally, my favorite part about the conspiracies is those who specifically believe that it was directed by Stanley Kubrick, the very famous director. There's this long list that you can find of how one of Stanley Kubrick's biggest movies, The Shining, very well known horror movie, has parallels to the moon landing. So you have the name slips me right now, but the character with the Apollo 11 shirt, and how the patterns of the carpet resembled like the NASA carpet or something like that. You know, these like very out there connections, so as they say, as that are supposed to be evidence of how Stanley Kubrick was the one who did the moon landing. But of course, it's all conspiracy.
Well, when you talk about the conspiracy, you really have to think about why people think it's true. And I think one of the main reasons is the lunar winds apparently waving the flag. You've heard about that one. You want to talk about more into it. Apparently, the way in the video, the flag was like the way it was on in the video, the winds that kind of the lunar winds that moved around the flag seemed very unrealistic as to what the winds on the moon or lack of winds would produce.
I think when it's conspiracy theories, just they kind of entertain people, and it allows people to draw these connections that they think may be there. But at the end of the day, conspiracy theories can be dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to note that, you know, when you take conspiracy as reality, that's a dangerous mindset to have. especially when it's applied and there are physical repercussions for it. So just to clarify, we here at the Gradient Podcast strongly affirm that the moon landing was real.
Really, really fake. So what you just said kind of strikes a chord in me, because what specifics of like this mainly humorous conspiracy sort of is dangerous, as you put it?
Well, it's not really this one specifically, but conspiracy theories as a whole. I'm not sure if you guys remember, but back in the 1970s and going into the 1980s, there was this conspiracy theory that these daycares were teaching satanic rituals to kids, and people actually went to jail, and I'm pretty sure people got killed as a result. And it just
even more recently, like back in 2016, during the presidential election race between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, there was the Pizzagate conspiracy, where people genuinely believed that that Hillary Clinton had a what was it, like a child prostitution ring under in the basement of a pizza, and a man went in armed and assaulted the place. So, you know, these applying conspiracies to reality do have a lot of dangerous effects.
One of the more, not legitimate, but widespread conspiracy theories that have the most chance of being legitimate, if to put it that way, what are your thoughts on it, would be the gold in Fort Knox. Is it there or is it just not?
I'm actually unfamiliar with that.
Yeah,
so if you
too,
could
actually
explain it a little
some
bit.
Insight.
So I could be wrong. I don't have much research. Fort Knox is a United States Army post in Kentucky that presumably holds, a large sum of gold. I think like $4 billion in gold, for the government to keep. But a whole thing about it is that they're very, very, very strict upon no visitors in the perimeter, and even the president doesn't have full ability to actually go and see the gold without an approval from Congress and a vote of some sort. And that leads people to believe, why is there such a very like strict policy on only $4 billion of gold? Because in the scheme of things, that's nothing comparative to what the government holds in power. So the whole conspiracy about it is that it's actually empty, and they don't want to seem sort of bad when they don't necessarily have the gold in there, when everyone thinks they do, or when they supposedly do.
My guess is Area 51, decoy. The aliens are actually in Fort Knox. That's the truth. They don't want you to know. Okay, just being clear, I'm joking.
They're not ready to have that conversation.
Do you guys remember in like September of last year how everyone like was going to raid Area 51?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
The whole you can't stop us all idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and like that idea of like aliens, you know. Back to the topic of space, extraterrestrial life has long been a concept in science fiction, but as we learn more about the universe, the possibility of there being life outside of our planet seems more and more likely, like every single day. So I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts on that.
I mean, if you think about it, right, everything is in space. So if there happens to be extraterrestrial life or anything that we are not familiar with, it's going to be in space, because everything is in space.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah.
In theory, yeah, but like, it's a very difficult concept to sort of comprehend, because if you think about the grand scheme of how gigantic the universe is, we're just a speck. The Earth is just a speck on the whole scheme of everything. And the fact that we are, to our knowledge at least, the one civilization that actually has life, it's kind of a big stretch, but it doesn't seem like the most likely situation when you come down everything of everything.
If we look at it from like a
if there's an infinite possibility of like, if the universe is in theory infinite, then there is an infinite chance that some other type of life exists out there. So this is something that, when you just think of it from a logical standpoint, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, from like a purely statistical outlook, I mean, the probability of there being life outside of Earth is like astronomically high, because the universe, as we know, is infinitely expanding, and so the chance of there being life somewhere else in the universe is incredibly high.
But long before we do, if we do happen to find any other life on the universe, we are far more likely to actually outsource our civilization to another planet like Mars. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on that, guys?
Yeah, so recently there's been a lot of teenagers like us who have been pushing for a campaign to colonize Mars, where they're worried about the state of the Earth as it is environmentally. And so they believe that the proper solution is to leave Earth and then go to Mars and colonize it there and make it hospitable for society to live on there instead.
I think one of the big pioneers of this movement would be CEO of Tesla, Elon Musk. Oh. And I absolutely love the fact that someone who has a sort of that down-to-earth mentality in terms of a lot of his the life he lives is one of the pioneers of this movement, because in the end it would be in the span that we'd likely go to Mars or reach Mars, it'd be the youth of today that Elon Musk sort of incorporates with or has that connection with that is of or are the leaders of this next move.
The future is definitely, I mean, with the developments and everything we have and all this experimentation when it comes to inhabiting life on Mars, the first thing they look for is things like water and stuff like that. If you're really interested in something like that, and teens like us clearly are, there's definitely a bright future for things like that.
There are countless opportunities one can take to be a part of this initiative or educate yourself more on the project of space exploration and NASA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, recently we've seen a very large push for more teenagers, especially young women, to be involved with STEM programs and going into fields like engineering and sciences. I'm for one in support of it. I think pushing more people to be in these very important and gratifying positions is a great way to get teens more involved with sciences.
I think it's a really great thing that we're pushing STEM as a whole, but specifically we're really pushing it at a younger age. Like my younger brother, he's only in elementary school and he's coming home and telling me about all these things he's learning in his STEM class. And again, just the fact that we're pushing this at such a young age, I'm hoping really inspires the next generation to have these kinds of interests.
I will say it from the beginning, it's the youth of today's time that are the leaders and the pioneers of the next movement and will make the more significant steps in space exploration comparative to the steps that are being taken today. And I think there are a lot of leaders in the world right now that are already credible enough or are on the process of being credible enough to be able to do these kind of things.
And if you are interested in things like STEM programs, there's so many available opportunities for you, and all you need to do is go and look for them. If anyone is interested, you can do a quick Google search, you can look for anything near you, and I'm sure you'll find a lot.
This video is brought to you by NASA. Thank you.
No, this video is not brought to you by NASA. Thank you.
Although we wish it was. Thank you.
But if NASA does want to sponsor us, just shoot us a DM. We'd be 100% down for that.
NASA, falls in your court. And so on that topic of STEM and especially young women in STEM programs and teenagers, we have a very special guest lined up for today's episode. Jade, you want to go ahead and introduce our guest?
Here we are. Next up, we have senior at Tuscaloosa County in Alabama, runner-up for the Mars Rover Naming Contest, and diehard One Direction fan, Vanessa Rupani. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for taking part in the Gradient Podcast, Vanessa. We here are very interested in your story naming the Mars Rover. Can you walk us through the process of how and why you decided to do so?
Yeah, sure. So last October, I saw a headline on NASA's website that said they're looking for students to name the Mars rover, and I thought it'd be a fun way to get involved in a subject that I was truly passionate about. So I entered an essay for the name Ingenuity, and in January, I was announced as one of the 9 finalists. And then a couple months later, it was eventually announced that my name did not win. Alex Mather from Virginia with the name Perseverance got to name the rover. And then a couple days after that, we found out that I would get to name the Mars helicopter instead.
So how did you find out about the helicopter? Because that wasn't originally like the contest, right?
Yeah, right. So they didn't, like, there was no plan to name it like until they were announcing the rover name and stuff. So basically how it worked was all communication is done through my mom, right? Since I'm not 18. So my mom gets a phone call the day before they announced the rover name. And they said, all right, we wanted to tell you in advance that Ingenuity didn't win. So you don't get thrown off or anything. but we want to tell you that we are using the name for something else, but we can't tell you what yet. So we go a couple weeks and we're just like anxiously waiting, like, are they going to use it? Like, are we going to get any more information? And then pretty much the week after schools close, we get an email saying, hey, we want to do a video chat with you and we want to tell you what we're going to use the name for. So I got to meet, I'm going to get her title wrong, I think it's the project manager of the helicopter team. And she introduced me to the project and told me that they were going to use the name for it.
So for this competition, do you know how many people entered the competition?
Yeah, so there were about 28,000 applicants total, I think.
Wow, second place out of 28,000?
Impressive.
Yeah, we all take it. It's pretty good.
So you obviously must have felt some like crazy excitement when you found out you made it this far. Can you walk us through how you felt?
Yeah, so the main emotions were disbelief, because it's like, no way, that's not true, you're making that up. And then the seconds are like excitement, and then everyone around me was super excited and supportive, so it was great to be surrounded by that community.
And I'm hearing that upon your choosing for the name of the helicopter, you were approached by many different news outlets like CNN. You were interviewed there?
Yeah, so that was probably the strangest part of the whole experience. Like, I've obviously never done anything like that, so being interviewed by like these channels I watch on TV every day was so surreal, and I guess it really showed how great of an honor this was.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about your visit to the Kennedy Center. How was that experience?
So that was also super surreal. That's probably the best word I can come up with. So we get there, and the first day we do a whole press interview section. So we got like reporters from all sorts of different places there. So I was there with Alex, the kid who got to name the rover. So we were there all day answering media questions. And then later in the afternoon, we got to do an interview with Jim Bridenstine, the administrator of NASA, which was like the coolest thing ever. Like, he gave us some great advice and he was telling us all about future missions. And then the next day we get to go see the rocket like up close. Like, we got to basically go up to the do not cross line where people aren't allowed there, but they took us to go see the rocket up close, and that was really cool. And then the day after that was the day of the launch, and that was like probably the coolest thing I've ever seen. So it was like, I mean, and we had to wake up early that day. Like, we got up at 4:30 in the morning that day, but it was totally worth it.
So when you went to like actually go to the launch and you saw like everyone was around there, right? Around the rocket. Did you like notice anybody through like, because I know you're very involved in that, or like interested doing research in NASA, because that's where you want to be when you're older. Did you, again, recognize anyone there?
Yes, I mean, so there were lots of super, like, important people there. We were actually watching with Jim Bridenstine, the NASA administrator. Like, he was standing there with me and Alex. And on top of that, we were beforehand. There was, like, a briefing where, like, everyone is speaking. The row in front of me, the CEO of Lockheed Martin was sitting there. The governor of Florida was sitting two rows in front of him. And, And the CEO of the United Launch Alliance, people who build the rocket, like, he actually gave me and Alex these coins here. He, like, hand-gave us these coins. So, like, wow. We got to meet lots of important, cool people. Huh?
You mind putting it up to the camera so they can see?
Yeah. So, on this side, it says Atlas, which is, like, the name of the rocket. And here, it's got some Perseverance art. It's got the helicopter on one side and the rover on the other.
Yeah, that's really cool.
You consider yourself a celebrity now?
I don't like that classification, no.
So, speaking about CEOs, as you mentioned, recently Elon Musk has been in the news lately about with the SpaceX launch. We would love to hear your thoughts on Elon Musk's space ventures.
I mean, I think all that stuff is really cool. Any way we can get the United States back to be a major player in space exploration is amazing. And what he does, for the cost he does it, is really impressive, and his technologies are great, and I'm excited to see them moving forward.
I wanted to ask a question. So we already talked about how you're very interested in pursuing NASA in the future. And can you tell us specifically like what you've been interested in the past and things you're interested in, you know, for your future growing up?
Yeah, so I mean, ever since I was little, like, I've loved space exploration. It's been like one of my biggest interests my whole life. So I want to go into aerospace engineering, so that's what I'm putting on all my college applications right now. So the goal is to work in engineering in the space field in some capacity.
So Buzz Aldrin messaged you on Twitter. How was that?
That was also one of the craziest things that's probably happened. So the thing is, I don't have a Twitter account, so I actually saw it on Google. And it was like, so I'm reading all these informations. I see Buzz Aldrin. I see my name in the same tweet. I'm like, that's also made up. So that was a super cool feeling. Like, one of the people I idolized tweeted about me. It was pretty awesome.
If I were in your shoes, the first thing I would have done was made a Twitter account and like try to be friends with him, like DM him and stuff.
I might still try to do that.
Your mind. Like, message Buzz Aldrin back, have a conversation with him.
You know, me and my buddy Buzz Aldrin, we hang out sometimes.
Second man to step foot on the moon. That has to be some crazy thing, just him knowing your name.
Yeah,
that's totally crazy.
Ask him for a recommendation letter when you apply to college.
Dude, I totally should.
That would be one heck of a letter.
Yeah.
So I think what you did just speaks miles to all teenagers about, you know, the limitless potential they have now and in the future. So what would you like to say to teenagers across the globe who are too scared to dream big?
I mean, I guess the main thing I learned from this was that it doesn't hurt to try. Like, I obviously entered thinking, all right, there's no chance anything is going to happen, but it doesn't hurt to just do it. Like, it'll be fun whether you get chosen or not. So the biggest thing that I can say is try, and the worst that can happen is someone will say no, and then you'll move on.
So all these like very influential and big people you met while visiting the Kennedy Center and the whole process of you naming the helicopter. I know when people go on the media and are in like front face like television and stuff, they put on these personas to try and act more professional. When you met these people, were they like actually how they were portrayed on the internet, or were they like down to earth people and whatnot? What were your experiences? Like, tell us the stories.
Now, these people were some of the kindest people I've ever met. They were so willing and eager to answer all our questions, and you could tell they really wanted us to have a good time, and they wanted to help us out in any way they could. They were some of the kindest people.
So on that note, I know there's been a recent push for young women in STEM programs to further develop their careers. Have you done anything along those lines of like STEM programs?
Yeah, so one thing that I'm really involved in with school is our Mu Alpha Theta, our Math Honor Society. And that's the main thing we do through that program is we offer free math tutoring once a week in the library. So I think that's a great way to get involved. And we were also really excited to start a Girls Who Code at our school this year, but the coronavirus sort of took those plans down because you only got to have one meeting before school closed.
So all these different patterns, they like sort of show a trend in my mind that you're using your influence to inspire others to better themselves, work towards their big dreams like you did.
I mean, that's the best thing that can happen for something like this. If what I did can inspire someone else, I mean, I think that's great. And I would love to be, you know, a help to anyone who wants to go into STEM and be successful there.
I want to know, what advice would you give to people who are also interested in NASA and space exploration? Like, where do you think they should start?
I mean, I start on the NASA website. That's a great place to start. But I mean, just research what you're interested in and take classes tailored to what you like and get involved outside of the classroom in activities that you enjoy. I mean, find any way you can to engage yourself in those interests.
So when you first applied to name the Mars rover, did you have any like thing on the back of your mind like, oh, my application was great, I have all these expectations, or did it like completely blindside you when you got the phone call or your mom?
I mean, I pressed send in October and like didn't even think about it once until January. I was like, I thought I could maybe make it to the semifinals round because that was like based on your state. So I figured, all right, Alabama, not many people. So, but beyond that, I was like, I pressed send and I was like, all right, that's the end of this. So no, what happened was truly a surprise.
So give us some further details. What was the application process like for the naming of the rover?
Yeah, so the first step was in the fall of 2019, where we had to write a short essay, about 100-150 words, what we want to name the essay and why. And then in January, they selected 50-something semifinalists, or no, 150-ish, my bad, semifinalists, from basically the top essay from each state in each grade level in the U.S. territories. And then from there, they chose 9 finalists, so 3 top essays from each grade level, K through 4, 5 through 8, and 9 through 12. And then we had to do an interview with 4 NASA panelists. So it was Dr. Lori Glaze, the head of Planetary Science Division, Nick Wiltsy, a rover driver, Jessica Watkins, she was an astronaut, and then Clara Ma, the woman who named the Curiosity rover. So we did an interview with those 4, and they asked us about the name and what we were interested in space exploration, why we thought it was important, that kind of stuff. And then a couple months after that was when they released the final name.
I find it crazy that you being interviewed by those people and now the reputation you've built as the name, the person who named Ingenuity, in the coming future, it's not a crazy like prediction to sort of put your name on that block in future, of course.
Man, to be associated with people like that in the future would be an incredible honor, and I'm so excited that you think that for me.
So do you want to go get into why you chose the name Ingenuity?
Yeah, so there were two steps to really picking this name, and the first one was I thought about curiosity and how it answered the question of why. Why do people want to explore space and explore Mars? And it's because by nature, humans are curious creatures. So I thought if that's going to answer the question why, I want to answer the question how. How is it possible to do something as send robotic explorers to another planet? Like, that sounds like something straight out of a science fiction movie. So I thought the one quality that represented the creativity and the intelligence it takes to do that was ingenuity. And then beyond that, I thought it was a great way of honoring the brilliant men and women who actually go and design these great machines.
If it were me, I would have gone on thesaurus.com and typed best. But I'm glad to see that you put so much thought into naming what is now the Mars rover, or Mars helicopter. I apologize.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, that's why I won and you didn't.
So, Vanessa, do you have any last words you would like to say to the viewers of the Gradient Podcast?
I mean, yeah, I guess I was really excited when I got to name the helicopter, and I appreciate all the support I've gotten from everyone, and that honing in on that message that it never hurts to just try something good may come out of it. And thank you guys for having me and letting me speak about it.
Vanessa, mm-hmm. I want to say thank you for coming on. You're a big inspiration to all of us at the Gradient Podcast, and again, just teens all over the globe. Thank you for joining us. The Gradient Podcast is happy to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It was a pleasure. And be sure to follow the Gradient Podcast on all their social media, Apple Music and Spotify, at the Gradient Podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.
Guys, this episode was supposed to finish, but we were talking a lot more about these conspiracy, and damn it, the moon landing was fake.
Sure. If you say so.
So before this video actually finishes, we just have a couple words for you guys here from the Gradient Podcast. So the first thing we want to say is we're in a constant mission to improve. We've done so much on our own time to try and make this podcast as best as possible. And one major step we took is this new video format. So let us know how you like it.
If you guys do enjoy this new format, all of our upcoming podcasts on the YouTube platform will be visual along with audio rather than our previous audio-only format.
And of course, once again, if you have any questions for us, feel free to DM us on Twitter or Instagram with any questions, and hopefully you can get featured on the intro of the next episode.
But if you're watching us on any of our other platforms that aren't YouTube, continue to do that. We appreciate your support, and nothing's going to change. It's going to be the same great content you love.
Or you can watch us on both and bring up our views. But make sure to check out the after show exclusively on the website. This episode's after show will be consistent of Evan and Jaden's takes on the contents of today. Thank you so much for tuning in.
As our guest said, make sure you follow the Gradient socials located down here.
Mm-hmm. And if you're watching on YouTube, a pop-up video should be somewhere around there, I think.
Please point a different direction, because that's over, like
maybe
the
down
end
there,
of the
you know. not sure yet.
Armand,
but,
point the opposite direction.
It could be here, it could be here, it could be here.
Could be there, could be there. We're not really sure yet, but go ahead and click it if you want to watch it. I'm sure it'll be great.
Right now, before we put it up, guess where we will put it up.
Comment below. Where's it going to be? Who's going to know?
Nobody knows.
You're wrong, and also drop a like if you're right. Thank you.
And thanks for watching, guys.
See you next time.
Have a nice day.
Goodbye.